Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Feral, a Werewolf Monster Romance by Trish Heinrich. Narrated by Viviana Marlowe and Matt Stauner. Prologue. Angelica. I looked out at the London skyline from my obscenely expensive penthouse apartment. It has a lovely view from the expansive windows in the living room. A delicious burn from the whiskey in my hand traveled down my throat, and I sighed. If only everything were as simple as a glass of good liquor to soothe the nerves. But nothing about my job as director of the Secret Archive was simple. Not cleaning up the messes left by the previous one, not protecting my few remaining agents, not safeguarding the dangerous artifacts so the world didn't go up in a fiery ball. The Secret Archive, the organization that had stood in the breach between the world and the dangerous artifacts for hundreds of years, was in shambles. Not that most people knew that, of course. No, only myself and the council truly knew how damn dire the situation was. My predecessor, a power-hungry psychopath by the name of Francesca, had corrupted the archive's original purpose by using artifacts as weapons, bargaining chips, and means of human experimentation. She'd created an atmosphere of terror within the organization to the point where half our agents had splintered off to form a rogue group that was currently waging a war against us. The other half that was left had either fled upon her death or tried to stick around on the promise that I would be a different kind of leader. And of those half, many had decided to leave anyway once they realized just how much damage Francesca had done to their mental health. Which left me, the new director, with a rather big problem. We were severely understaffed, and artifacts were being stolen left and right by the rogue group calling themselves the Protectors. I snorted into my whiskey at the ridiculously self-righteous name. "Protectors my ass," I murmured. "What about your ass?" I jumped at Trey's voice, fighting the blush that was threatening to rise to my cheeks. The staggeringly handsome Korean man leaned against my doorway, arms crossed and a smirk on his face, showing off his dimples. Trey was my liaison with the council who, understandably, didn't trust me with the powers of the director's role yet. He was to observe and report back to the council, but he was supposed to be neutral. "Yeah, right. Do you ever knock?" I asked, setting the drink down on my glass coffee table. "I love what you've done here," he remarked. "When Francesca owned it, the place had a heavy feel to it." I hadn't really wanted the apartment that went with the title, not at first. But when I found out that it once belonged to Francesca, I couldn't resist coming in and seizing everything she'd owned. The precious artwork she'd stolen had been donated to a museum, while every scrap of her other belongings, down to the last crystal champagne flute, had been sold at auction and the proceeds given to the families of her victims. Francesca would have absolutely hated that. "Poetic justice, if you ask me." The penthouse was huge, far bigger than I would ever need on my own. Still, I had redecorated it with special care in case any of my children came to visit. My grown children. I'm old enough for grown children, which means I definitely should not be allowing this man to flirt with me or give in to the temptation to flirt back. It didn't matter that Trey was several hundred years old and a dragon. It didn't matter that my husband had been dead for almost 9 months, or that I sometimes woke from dreams of Trey's hands all over my body, his tail wrapped around my ankle while he... No, none of that mattered. Trey looked at least 20 years younger than me, and he was my colleague. I was a widow and a grandmother albeit relatively young for both, and I was here to do a very dangerous, very important job. I was not here to take a lover, no matter how much he smoldered at me from across the room. "What do you want, Trey?" I asked, pushing as much ice into my voice as possible. "The council is concerned about your solution to our staffing problem."
"Oh? And do they have an alternative? Because I'm all ears."
"Sadly, no. And so they've given you permission to proceed with caution." "How generous," I muttered into my glass. "But I have some questions for you about this, off the record."
"Really?
Off the record?" His smile faded to a serious frown, the color of his scales on his hands, which looked like tattoos to the unsuspecting, glowed. His glamour made him appear human, but in all reality, Trey had 4 different dragon forms, each powerful in their own way. I had never seen any of them, but I'd seen moments of emotional agitation when his glamour would let through some of his latent power. Now was one such moment, and it made me wary.
"What's wrong?"
I asked.
"The supernatural community was brutalized under Francesca's time," he began, a rolling growl under his words.
"I know. That's why I intend to approach them with respect and caution, to prove to them that we are different, on their side."
"How?"
I let out a long breath. "I'm not sure. Each group has different rules, different opinions and experiences with the archive, some worse than others. I confess that I'm unsure how to proceed." Trey swaggered toward me, a grin on his face.
"I humbly volunteer as tribute."
I snorted. "You've been watching too many movies."
"I admit, I have a soft spot for the teen dystopian dramas. To think they actually made a franchise out of a ritual dragon youths once performed, though not to the death, of course."
I rubbed my temple in tight circles to try and relieve the pain behind my eyes. "Trey, I have a headache. Does this conversation have an end?" He moved closer and plucked the drink from my fingers.
"What do you think?
A scalp massage, while I tell you." He'd never asked to touch me before, nor had he ever done more than flirt from a distance. Now, however, his sweet, scented breath was brushing against my face, and I could see the flecks of cobalt in his dark eyes, the whisper of blue in his thick black hair. He was beautiful, in a way only something cloaked in mystery and danger could be. "Fine," I sighed and turned around. One hand went to my shoulder, his touch warmer than a mundane like me. With his other hand, he plunged his long, nimble fingers into my hair and began to work my scalp in firm motions. I closed my eyes in spite of myself. God, did it feel good to be touched, to be cared for, even if it was vastly inappropriate to let a council member do this.
He's the one that asked. Oh my goodness. He has magic fingers.
"Now," he whispered as his other hand began to work on the knots in my shoulder,
"I propose that I work beside you as consultant of sorts to the supernatural community. I could help you navigate their customs, their painful history with the former director, and act as a liaison between you and them."
Heat from his body was melting into mine, and I wanted so much to lean against him, to feel the hardness of his muscles against me. I held on to my focus by the slimmest margin and remembered my personal rules. No more romance. No one else added to the list of people who could get hurt if I screw all this up. Professional, simple relationships only.
"Why would you do that?" I asked, desperately trying to keep my voice even.
Because I think this could work. In fact, I think you've shortchanged how brilliant this actually is in giving us an edge against the Protectors. You get in good with the supernatural community again, and perhaps they will start to fill our field agent ranks. And since the Protectors seem hell-bent on keeping the ranks of supernaturals they have to a small number, yes, that makes sense.
You see, his lips came dangerously close to the shell of my ear. We make a good team, Director.
Don't call me that. I turned my head before I could think better of it. His eyes bore into mine, and for a second his fingers stilled on my body. Trey's mouth was close, his breath ghosting across my face. I'd be lying if I said he didn't do things to my body that a woman in my position could not afford to indulge in. Not when I'd learned the hard way what it was like for a mundane to fall for someone with supernatural powers. Slow, agonizing torture, punctuated by fleeting moments of happiness. Never again. I extricated myself from his grip and snatched my whiskey from the coffee table.
My apologies.
His voice was just a touch breathy. I couldn't help smiling at the fact that I'd actually gotten to him for a change. Call me Angelica when we are alone and Director Dearborn when we're with others, but never just Director. That was Francesca, not me.
I understand.
Those words held far more than just an agreement about what to call me. Trey really did understand why I hated that woman, why the memory of her brought a bitter fury to my blood. She'd used and tormented my family for 30 years, threatening my children and imprisoning my husband before finally killing him. And I had been the one to end her life with a swipe of a sword, like some kind of hero in a book. It had been necessary. It had been justice. So why does the memory still make me sick? I finished off my whiskey and turned to face Trey, who had been waiting patiently this whole time. Find me a meeting with someone, anyone, I instructed. I want to begin immediately. We need more agents.
Still no word on the missing shipment?
No. And now I have 2 dead field agents. Trey grimaced.
I'm sorry.
Don't be sorry. Help me beat them. Trey's lips curled up and, damn him, he looked like he was about to say something downright smutty or devious.
Or both.
And isn't that just my type? At the thought of David, I tightened my jaw and shut down any attraction to Trey. It wasn't that David would want me to remain a widow forever. He wouldn't. But the thought of anyone in my life after what had happened to him, I just can't.
Angelica,
Trey whispered.
What's wrong?
Nothing. I'm tired. He gave me a slow nod.
You know, if we are going to be working together like this, we should get to know one another. Become friends.
Why?
Because friends work together better, and I think you could use one.
The last part was devoid of any flirtation, anything coy. He was being sincere, and it shot straight through my defenses because he was right. I was bone-achingly lonely, and I needed someone I could talk to about all the fears and complications of my new life. I wouldn't burden my 2 oldest children with it, even though they'd been a part of the archive not that long ago. Their experiences were the stuff of nightmares, my oldest in particular. Having someone I could unload on at the end of a hard day or have by my side in the case of a difficult decision could make all the difference.
All right,
I said, extending my hand to him. Friends. His shake was firm, warm. My fingers grazed the scales on the back of his hand and a tiny zing of power rolled up my fingers like I'd gotten a little shock.
Sorry, he grimaced, pulling back. It can be challenging holding my glamour for long periods of time. Sometimes things
leak out. It's all right. I suppose you can drop it around me if you're comfortable with that. He cocked an eyebrow.
Would you be comfortable with that?
I seriously thought about that. I'd had limited contact with most supernaturals since taking over this position. We did have some on staff, though most were relegated to non-agent roles, like security and artifact storage. I wasn't unfamiliar with them, but I knew enough to know that a dragon was an entirely different thing than an orc or mothman. I believe I would. And if we are to be working together more, I would think I need to become more comfortable with at least one of your true forms. He nodded.
That makes sense, but not tonight. I'll meet you at your office tomorrow morning. You like two sugars in your coffee, right?
Yes. Why?
Impress your new friend 101. Feed their caffeine addiction.
He smirked and showed himself out of my penthouse. I hated to admit that I missed him already, and that I was looking forward to seeing him tomorrow. I'm just lonely for a friend, that's all. I nodded at myself. Yes, that's all it is.
Chapter 1. Fraser. I didn't want to be here. I mean, I wanted to be here drinking beer, but I would have rather it was with one of my brothers or another member of my clan. I would have rather it have been purely fun and social, instead of the dire situation that now faced me. Sunlight streamed in through the large windows, illuminating the spotless floors and tables polished to a shine. The belief that all pubs were grimy establishments may have been true for mundane pubs, but the supernatural ones didn't smell or look like a stables. We took pride in our places of refuge, especially since, throughout history, our kind has been hunted so brutally. Werewolves, perhaps, especially. The booths at the Ace and Griffin were nice and roomy to accommodate the usually large stature of the magical creatures that frequented the pub. Like most of our pubs in Scotland, this one was the site of a former bank. Unlike most of them, this one had a protective glamour and boundary spell around it to both disguise the clientele and keep mundanes the hell away. I shifted in the booth, the old leather groaning under my massive, furry body, and took a long pull from my pint. I wasn't the only werewolf. There were four at the table near mine and one incredibly large werebear that just barely fit in the chair he was perched atop. A couple of harpies were giving a mothman a hard time, but he seemed to like it, the idiot. Two gargoyles were shooting darts. The pints clenched in their fists looked like a child's sippy cup. I was a little surprised to see a few mundane lasses sitting with the ephemerals in a corner, so I tried to see into the gloom the creatures projected. If the mundanes were being hypnotized into sitting with those creepy bastards, I'd have to step in. But after some not-at-all-subtle staring, I was able to determine that they were fine. Mundanes were what we called the unmagical crowd. The ones in the corner didn't know they were in a pub that catered to beings that they might see as monsters. They saw exactly what the glamour made them see. Regular men and women in for a pint or two in the middle of the day. The only mundanes that could darken the door of the Ace and Griffin had to be with one of our kind, and even then, most of them weren't given permission to see beyond the glamour that protected us and the bar. If they weren't with one of us, the mundanes gave this place a wide berth, good whiskey or not. The glamours had evolved over the years, from spelled charms that wore off in a few hours to specialised magical tattoos that were created specifically for each supernatural. We all received our permanent glamours when we reached whatever age was maturity to our species. For most supernaturals, it was 18. And if there was any growing left to be done, our glamours would change with us. Not only that, but whenever our glamours were in place, it felt real to anyone touching us. The clothes we wore in the disguise, our hair, muscles, skin, all of it. No one, not even another supernatural, would be able to tell the difference. We could alter any part of our bodies, making aspects of our true form disappear if we wanted to. Or if someone wanted to be very strange, we could manipulate our bodies into any kind of hybrid combinations. If I wanted, I could have yellow eyes all the time, or longer fingers. But I wasn't stupid. Mundanes feared what they didn't understand. And throughout our long history living alongside them, the one thing we all could agree on was that mundanes never would, or could, rightly understand us. Oh, sure, there were a few exceptions. But they were just that. Exceptions. The rule was to be hunted and killed, and in my kind's case, to be destroyed damn near from existence. We still didn't have many numbers, not compared to the days of the Druids, and even less compared to the days of the ancient Scottish clans. But the glamours, originally created by the Druids, had helped keep us through the dark times, and when witches had discovered how to do it for all the supernaturals, it had enabled us to come out of hiding, to create relationships with others outside our species. It didn't mean we always got along. There had been wars, to be sure, but given how precarious our existence was in some ways, getting along was a matter of survival. I checked my watch and growled, causing the harpies to stare at me. Werewolves weren't exactly known for their patience, and right now, mine was stretched thin. I'd asked the damn gargoyle to be here half an hour ago, and yet here I was, sitting alone and nursing my pint like a lass stood up on a date. I was the liaison between the MacDonald Werewolf clan and the secret archive, a job that had been forced upon me by the previous director to protect my clan. I had no idea how she'd met her demise, but I didn't shed a tear for that cow. She'd cost my clan good men and women with her scheming and threats, including my granddad. He'd sacrificed himself so we'd have safety, thrusting my brother Angus into the alpha role. Angus wasn't the trusting sort before all that blew up, and after, he'd become less so. The fact that I had agreed to take on a role as go-between with the organization that had killed the man that had raised us had caused a rift between Angus and me, one that still made my heart ache. I loved my brother, respected him. We'd been close as bairns, but time and the burden of responsibility had made Angus hard, withdrawn. There were many days that I wondered if I knew my brother at all. James says this new director isn't like the other. She's firm but fair. We'll see, won't we, if the arse ever shows up. My claws scraped against the glass of the pint, and I decided to just drain the damn thing. The amber liquid ran down my throat, and I closed my eyes on a huff of breath. The earth fae that ran the brewery for most of the magical pubs in Scotland knew their shit. I didn't care much for beer anywhere else, but this brew reminded me somehow of running out under a moonlit, cloudless sky, the wind in my fur, the scent of wood smoke in the air. That's some powerful magic they've infused in there. No wonder it was so pricey. I hadn't been out to the country for more than the 3 full moon nights every month in ages. It would be nice to just walk the hills at my leisure without the frenzy that overtook us during the full moon. But in the past few years, I've been too busy making sure my clan was protected to enjoy a break out in the countryside. And I wasn't just protecting them from the secret archive, but from the other clans. Campbell, in particular. I huffed out a frustrated breath through my nose, startling the harpy walking by. "What's the matter, Wolf?" she asked, her serrated teeth gleaming in the light from the window. "You lonely?" The harpy wasn't bad looking as her species went. Her breasts were high and firm under the shirt she wore for decency among us all, and her feathers shone red and blue with golden accents that matched her eyes. And the claws on her feet were clean, something that couldn't be said for some of her ilk. I knew by the flush on her face that she wanted me to take her into the bathroom and fuck her quick and dirty. Well, maybe I didn't know it that specifically, but I was pretty sure she wouldn't say no if I suggested it. She ran her long talon through the black fur along my shoulder, grazing the bare skin on my chest. I didn't wear a shirt, just a kilt and a sporran for personals. "You waiting on someone?" she whispered. "Me, maybe?" It had been an embarrassingly long time since I'd rutted with anyone, and while my cock might stir at the thought of rough, anonymous fucking, it also left a hollow ache in my chest. Unbidden, her face came to mind, the way she'd stared at me, cowered and spat out her disgust at the blood on my hands, matted in my fur. Sylvia had been the only mundane I'd ever fallen in love with. I was going to reveal myself to her, ask her to be my mate, when someone from a rival clan had attacked us. I'd gone into a rage, let the glamour that made me look human slip, and ripped the assailant apart with my bare claws. Understandably, Sylvia had been shocked, frightened. I had expected that, but not the sheer and utter disgust, horror even, in those lovely eyes. She'd run from me, called the police when I showed up at her door, and moved back to London within the week. That was over a year ago, and I hadn't been able to stomach being with a female since. I winced unwillingly and took the harpy's hand off my body. "Not today, lass," I whispered, letting a growl into the syllables. Her bottom lip stuck out in a pout.
"Well, if you change your mind..."
"I won't. Now, unless you want to get me another pint, you can get your feathered arse away from me." She turned with a glare, muttering something about grumpy werewolves and how I needed to get laid. I was about to growl at the mothman behind the bar for another pint, when the door opened and everyone went completely still. Fear and trepidation thickened the air in a second, and that was usually enough to at least get the werewolves growling. But the scent underneath all that was what silenced them and me. It was what had the ephemerals disappearing into their shadows, the gargoyles putting on their stone skin. It had the harpies hissing, a posture more than anything. It was the smell of magic, very old and very powerful magic. Like brimstone and the beginning of the world. That's not James, it's... I turned slowly, knowing better than to move too quickly when something this old and powerful was in the room. The click of long claws on the stone floor was the only sound as the being drew closer. When I'd finally managed to turn around, I realized that our reactions were actually very well deserved. In fact, if we were smart, we would be running out the door. The two mundanes stared with wide eyes at the complete change in the pub.
"Lasses," the mothman said, gliding out from behind the bar, "I think it's time for you to leave."
The mundanes nodded and...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?